This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
Well, welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have Shit Show Saturday number one in the house. Still alive and thriving. The man, the myth, the legend, the Christopher Walken Borat hybrid.
Should we do a public service announcement for this? Please. That we're going to be discussing death, suicide, health issues, and traveling around the world?
Yeah.
So let all our listeners be warned that this could be triggering.
They all are.
Yeah, they all
every
are.
Every
episode is triggering. So you've been given your HBO trigger warning.
Yeah, exactly. So I just want to know, what song do you want played now when you walk into a room?
Peter Frampton and Do You Feel Like We Do.
Mm.
It's a great pick-me-up tune. I could probably give you 5 songs, but that one's...
It would take too long. Okay, you got it. Okay, here's what I want to know. Tell me what sort of condition or state you were in when you first joined the community. What was going on in your life?
The state of my emotional dysregulation was so bad. And I think that the trauma that I had never really addressed. Yeah, I mean, I think just a host of issues regarding emotional development that have kind of progressed since in the last 3 years. Yeah, and it's just so wild because I had to do so many different modalities of healing. It's like internal family systems, trauma work, Mark will lend stuff regarding intergenerational trauma. And man, I think if I had really known better, I probably should have majored in sociology and psychology, because I think when I got frozen at 17 because of all this stuff that happened then, I think there was a lot of, you know, I went into studied accounting and for a career and stuff like that. But I think there was a lot of aspects of emotional development that I really, really needed that we really had been, not developed. Yeah.
And prior to that, had you been a part of a group before, like a healing community?
Well, I had done some Bible study back in probably 2011. I was doing AA for a while, probably around that time too, because relationship issues is like, maybe I could, if I stop drinking and if I got God, that I can put my marriage back together and stuff like that.
So now, as we stand here today, how do you feel like your perception of your childhood has shifted as you've gone about this journey?
I think I have a lot more appreciation for what my parents were attempting to do. I think the idea of limiting beliefs, and I'll give you an example that just happened to me the other day. I took my dog out to my brother's farm, and so here, trigger warning on this. So my dog is like 95 pounds. He's kind of he's a big dude. And my brother has a bunch of goats, and he went and attacked one of these goats, and it was not good. It was pretty bad. And I was pretty rattled by it. So it's my son's dog. And I came home and I said to him, whatever we're doing is not working. We've got to do something else. And so I made a couple of calls right away, and I found this really good dog trainer, and this dude evaluated him in a half an hour. And most of the time, whenever you're dealing with difficult pets or anything like that, what you're really doing is adjusting the attitude of the owner. That's where the change is. The animal is just the animal. And so I had this brief conversation with my son, made these arrangements, met with this guy, did a couple two training sessions and stuff. And I think that what really has to happen is that the change has got to originate in you. I mean, I think if you see something that's not working, there's no sense trying to beg and ask for something from somebody else that can't give it to you. I mean, it has to start with you. It's just like, you know, if you were, and I think for many, many years of my life, I was waiting for the change to come to me. And I think you've you know, whatever you're unhappy with, whatever you do. And it can only be baby steps at a time. I think what you really got to do is you got to fucking own it just a little bit at a time. And so when I was thinking about what Mitchell had wrote about being feral, the dog is a dog, right? And even as humans, we're feral in a bit every day that we're trying to learn something, trying to be a little bit better. And I think if we can own what we can do, that's all we can do. We can't really expect our parents. We can't really expect our friends to meet us. I mean, we got to, not to belabor a dead horse, but we got to own our shit. And that's where the change starts. Like, what can I do? What's in my power? What resources are available to me? I mean, obviously this podcast and everybody that's talking about it and all the psychologists and sociologists that you interview, they're all a change agent. And it's like opening doors into different possibilities about what your preconceptions are, what do you believe in. And so it's really about altering your mind state about what is possible. And it doesn't happen overnight. I've been doing this for, 3 years? Yeah. And I think there's circumstances beyond our control that we have to regulate too. I think that's what makes it really difficult, is because there's this court case that really wasn't mine for 5 years. I didn't own it. I mean, but it was my responsibility. It didn't start with me, but I had to find a way to finish it. And that's difficult. It's difficult because what can I do? And I just do a little bit every day, but it can be daunting because sometimes those things don't clear up as fast as you'd like. They linger and they hover for years, and all you can do is persevere.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I asked you this in your first interview, but what do you know about your parents' upbringings?
Well, that's a really good question, because in the summer of 23 and 24, when I was taking my sabbatical, I had some long form conversations with my mom. Never really knew about her experience and stuff like that. And from what I learned, this is like when my parents got started in real estate, my mom was the seed money person. So back in the 60s, and they bought this building in Chicago, and she had $5,000, and they bought it. And they bought it from a dude on a land contract. Well, the funny thing is I was dealing with this land contract thing for the last, since 19, and which I just sold the property and closed last Friday. So it's done. The estate's done. I just have to do the final estate tax return. But she was the catalyst for so much of what began. And she never got any credit for it. And I never knew anything about it until 2 years ago. And I think what was interesting is I think that she had suffered so much financial and emotional abuse from my dad that nobody ever hurt her. And I think in a lot of ways, my mom is oil, my dad's water, whatever. And it's just like two people that are not hearing each other. They don't have the same goals. They're not on the same wavelength. And I think what she had done is I think she really, really tried. But I think for even post-divorce, when they got divorced in the 80s, I don't think she never got any credit from me for what she had did, because there was a lot of venom that she had to my dad. But I think on the other hand too, she was instrumental in kind of getting it all started. The other thing I found out is, like, back in when my parents were splitting up back in the 80s, they had bought a business, and my dad was fucking ADD. He was like an atom, just bouncing everywhere. So they bought a business, and this is something I didn't know either, and they had a line of credit of like $100,000 for this business and stuff. And it got to the point that she goes into the bank, and the banker asked her, Janet, what do you want to do? And she says, like, I want you to call the note. So they had to sell whatever assets. They had to eliminate all the cash to pay the bank off. By this time, I was in college, but I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't really have a really good, firm understanding of the financial implications of this. So they had some equity, and they get to keep their house and whatever. But they had to kind of start over, and they went their separate ways. But once again, this is a pretty heavy-duty thing, but I never knew anything about it. And the volatility, I think that might have started humbling my dad, but by that time I was gone. I was out of the house, and his volatility prior to that was just, I couldn't, just like, this guy's too dangerous. And especially when I was having a lot of personal issues when I was like 17, 18, and my dad was like, never said a word, didn't acknowledge it, didn't know what to do with it. It was like, I think there was a form of emotional development that he didn't have the capacity to deal with. He didn't have to, if there was human relation issues like that, we can work this out. It's just, he was very linear, very focused on trying to make money. That was it. That was all he wanted to do. And even then, I found out too, is that, and this was kind of a body blow when my mom got pregnant with me. She was like, well, your dad didn't really want to have kids because your dad thought kids were too expensive. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of explains like this, you know, when you talk about like early childhood trauma is like, oh man, well, maybe that's why we didn't really get along. Is like, I was never really wanted, you know? And I'm like, so these were like fucking things that came up like in the last two summers. I was like fucking body blow after body blow. And where I'm leading in that is like, I think that's why transparency and communication and some humility too is really, really important. It's like, I'm doing some faith-based stuff and I was just doing this grief work. And I think that sometimes, hey man, it's great to aspire. Okay. But I think the little things too matter. And I just think about something that I did for my birthday. I invited all my kids out. And then we went up to this bar and we did axe throwing for a couple hours for my birthday. And it's just like those little things really matter. And I think there was, God, I can't remember his name, but the men's dude, but he talks about grandiosity in men and depression and whatever. And he talked, you know,
Terry Real.
Yeah. And I think there was this element of grandiosity that I inherited from my dad that my dad had. It's like, if I got this money, I'd be safe. This would take care of me. But the reality is that you have to live in the present, right? You've got to do the little shit. But if you're always future focused, you're not available to your kids. The kids can't see you. They can't feel you. They don't know that you're present. And kind of segueing into where my dad's background was, my grandfather was an orphan. Mm. And so I think he was born in like Hamilton, Ontario or whatever like that. And I don't really know the circumstances of it, my grandfather's, how he was raised. I think he lived in, with maybe an aunt and uncle. And I think that the conditions of that, by 13, 14, 15, that he split, tried to make it on his own. And I think he joined the service at some point in time. But I think that my dad's dad had a hard life. And I think that there was some stuff that came up that after I had interviewed, I was kind of on this vision quest or quest to like understand my dad's side of the family. There was stories from my uncle that my grandfather would tape my dad to a chair. You know, obviously I can't prove it, but so when my dad was 18, he's out. And I think my dad being the firstborn, that there was domestic violence with my dad and my grandfather. And I think that played a heavy role in the influence between my dad, because my dad was always wanted to hit me. He's like, you know, I was in AA 2011 and I'm like, you have that part where you're trying to make amends. So I went out and I was talking with my dad about his childhood and stuff like that. And he says like, yeah, he's like, I never hit you. But in my mind, I'm like, dude, you wanted to wail on me so many times because you would like cop.
Wind up.
Mm-hmm. Wind up. And so I think that played a heavy, heavy role in my development about trying to not trust people, do it all yourself, rely on yourself, which in a lot of ways not really helping. I mean, you know, you can be mindful of it, but I think resiliency and what is the word that I want to use? Self-reliance is only good to a point. I mean, you need community. I mean, whether or not you're in a business deal or trying to raise your kids, communities, sometimes people share information. It doesn't always have to be salacious. It can be like, how do I get my property taxes reduced? You know, and I think there was a part of me that was so determined to do it on my own. And I think by the time I came here, marriage ending, I just had run out of road with all the tools that I had, and I needed a whole new toolbox. And I didn't know how to start. And so, I mean, a lot of it, that's where I was pretty broken in 2020. So one with meditation work, it was at least a tool to start learning how to regulate my thoughts, because the rumination, you got to a point where whatever you're doing is just no longer working anymore. And you're just like, I need to want to live a better life. How can I find a way to live a better life? And I think obviously this podcast, other people that are doing any kind of AA work or even grief work, that I just finished this 5-month program in this grief class, because I was trying to mourn this journey after my dad died of how do I grieve what just happened to me and all of the chaos of being this executor. I mean, it was just one thing after another. And I think after a month, it was really good because I had a lot of anger. And then, so it was funny when Josh was talking about spirituality and God. So I started going back to church and we were talking about higher powers and stuff because I knew that at this point, I can't control any of this. So I was like, let me go to church. Let me see, just give it up, surrender it. And
Well, I want to circle back to the grief course, but I wanted to know, did you ever meet your dad's dad or his parents?
Yeah.
Did you have a relationship with them?
Yeah, the family fractured probably in the late 70s. My grandfather and my grandmother divorced and everybody went their separate ways. And there was never any connection. It's like my one uncle fell into like drug abuse and had three different wives, but he was probably the most salt of the earth guy. He was really, really pragmatic. And then the other uncle, and that dude is like carbon copy of my dad. I was like, holy shit, man, his mannerisms and everything. I was like, whoa, this is weird. It's like a doppelganger. So I think my mom's family is much more closer, you know, whether or not how functional, it's pretty reasonably normal, you know, I think, but I think the way my father's family was very, very dysfunctional. And I don't know if that was just a byproduct of, well, I think there's a lot of factors to it. I think they moved around a lot. Everybody had their own idea, but they did not, once the parents split up, and like an aunt disappeared 40 years ago, nobody knows where she went. Wow. So there's something that happened. I mean, the dynamic in the family, and that whether it was my grandfather's trauma for being an orphan or a war vet, who knows? My mom is always in contact with her brothers and sisters and stuff. So there's some sort of continuity there. But actually, on a side note regarding my mom, I think what struck me was my mom is really, really heavy into astrology. And I had this takeaway when I was talking to her. I was like, I think this astrology is what she's using to make sense of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, I'm not really into it. And I think it's interesting when she's Venus is by Mars and Jupiter, and this is what, but I'm like, this isn't my jam, because you're talking about cosmic forces and shit like that. And I get it, but I don't get it. And
no offense to anybody who's listening that's really into astrology.
Yeah. But I think that there was such an element to my mom that not being heard, not being seen. Because, I mean, look, as sons, I don't think we treated my mom particularly well. And, of course, we're recording this before Mother's Day. But I have a whole new appreciation of what her experience was in living with dad. I mean, I think living with my dad was, I don't think you could ever win. I think it was a lose-lose. He would take. He had said something to her, to the effect, this is my money. And I'm like, and that was how we rolled. I mean, mine. I mean, it was brutal. And it was just like, it was very, very hard. I mean, so my mom, I think in some ways it was like astrology. Yeah, you know, it kind of made sense of the universe and stuff. Like, I think that's a form of trauma in the sense that you're up against all these obstructions and you're just trying to make sense of your world, disassociation, whatever.
Yeah, form of control. All right, shit show ladies. Have you ever had those days where everything just feels so much damn harder than normal and you can't figure out why? I already know the answer to that question is yes. And boy, have I definitely had more than my fair share of those days and totally get just how frustrating this can be. But recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress, lack of sleep, a dysregulated nervous system. It could also be my hormones at play. And that is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Any shit show can do it. Just answer a few questions about what you've been going through and where you're at in life. After taking this quiz, you'll get personalized recommendations to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. So I took this hormone quiz myself. The quiz suggested that my body may be overloaded with estrogen, which is affecting me in all kinds of ways. And one of the recommendations that I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony, which helps with
bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. Now, taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's also about investing in our healing journey. And so by taking this quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance, which will allow you to start making small, intentional changes to support you on this healing journey. Whether it's the Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product, the quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. So if you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find out the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ADULTCHILD for 15% off today. All right, Chicho, so if you're like me and you care about your skin, you want to have nice looking skin, perhaps you have sensitive skin, but you don't want to fuss with or have the time for a 7-step skincare routine, then this one is for you. Le Pure Naturals Beef Tallow Face Cream, which I have been using for the past few months, and my skin has been thanking me. So this face cream is gentle, simple, and effective, made with real natural ingredients you can actually pronounce. No synthetic fillers, no chemicals you can't identify, just nutrient-rich beef tallow, pure essential oils, and beneficial ingredients like raw honey and vitamin E. It's one jar, one step, and you're done. Totally shit show proof. Perfect for anyone who wants healthy skin without the hassle. So if you're ready to unlock your natural glow and discover the power of nature's original skincare, then head on over to lepurenaturals.com/adultchild for 40% off. That is lepure, L-A-P-U-R-E, naturals.com/adultchild for 40% off. Go get this great deal. Your face wants this. Your face needs this.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist, because we're all better with help. Visit betterhelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
When you were having these conversations with her and she was sharing more about, you know, her relationship with your dad, was there room for you to share about your experience?
Yeah, she was very cognizant of how difficult it was for me. I mean, I think that was the one thing with my mom that I probably cherished the most, is that even though she kind of seemed a little off, but I think she was pretty self-aware. She was pretty aware the situation that we were living was no longer sustainable. So she's like, I told you to leave at 18. And I'm like, well, I kind of like did that decision on my own. But I think that she knew the water was going down the toilet, and she's like, get out. So I think that she did everything that she could with what she had. And I think that by the time that I left, and I think that when she had no more to give to my dad, and she's like, get out. She's like, I need peace. I think that's where she was. She just couldn't handle the never-ending drama with my dad. The dude was the Tasmanian devil. He was just a whirlwind. In a lot of ways, it was kind of cool. In my grief class, I'm like kind of in awe of what he was able to do. Not all of it good, but in a lot of ways, I was like, it's like, holy shit, how did he juggle all this?
So has your perspective on grief shifted from that? Or is there, like, what was the big takeaway for you?
Well, I think with grief, I think it manifests in your body and your memory. And I think that the anger, now I have a whole new appreciation about it, that I think our parents are very imperfect people. And I think that, is the word grace, complicated grief? I mean, I think grief is complicated because I think there are certain things that are unforgivable. I don't know if any of the circumstances that I came from were unforgivable, but I think for other people, whether it be sexual assault or domestic violence and stuff like that, those aren't worthy of forgiveness. I mean, you could live with it, but I didn't have to deal with that. But I think the lack of care was probably more abusive than to say, can I help you with anything? That was not in his repertoire. And that's the thing that I try to do now with my own kids, is like, I might not have the ability to do everything that you need or want, but I can do some stuff. And I think making yourself available to your children is probably really important. Did I answer your question?
No, it was just about grief. I'm curious if there's any grief that's come up around just as you've had these more realizations about your mom and her experience, just about the relationship that you didn't have with her at certain points or what your perception of her was for a long time. Has there been any grief that's come up there?
No, I don't think I don't think it's nearly as on a 10-point scale. If my grief for my dad was like 8 or 9, I think with my mom, it would be like 3 or 4. It wasn't really, I think my mom and I had a decent enough relationship that I think she's lived a very meager, humble existence since she got divorced. She's traveled all over the world. I think she's in the aftermath of getting divorced. I think she ended up living her best life. So I think there was a lot of inspiration for how she lived her life as far as going places that I probably inspired me to do it, maybe subconsciously, that I didn't give her conscious credit for, since I was able to travel so much. Yeah.
What about as far as the grief related to your dad and from doing this course? Is there something that you were holding on to about yourself, like whether it be some sort of limiting belief or just something that you internalized and ingrained as a result of the relationship with your dad that you feel like you have been able to release?
Yeah. Wow. This is such a good question, because I know that there's been huge amounts of release. The problem I have is I can't quantify it. I can't explain what was released in words. I don't have the language for it. Yes, if I was to try, is I just have an understanding that people are imperfect. And I don't know if I can give you any more than that, because I don't know if I know it.
Is there like maybe an aspect of depersonalizing it?
I think that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, that's a really nice way of putting it. It's just facts, or it's just what happened. These are the events. It's just events that happen in a life. Sometimes these things happen and they're really not about you. But I think that's a really important point, because it's changing the relationship to you that you're having to those memories. It's taking it's just stuff. Before it would be anger and resentment and disappointment and sadness and stuff. And now you come to a point in the aftermath of it, it's just stuff that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not about you. I'm curious, especially like since you've started your new job, are you able to see your growth, like your healing? Like, are you able to see how, and I understand it's like a completely different environment and a different sort of role and responsibility, but are you able to see how you are handling things differently than you would have when you first started this healing journey?
Oh yeah, I would be a lot more emotional before, and now I'm just like, whatever, just roll with it. I do get frustrated because there is this kind of whisper business, but I'm a lot better at regulating and more importantly, prior to this, some unfortunate thing would happen and then it would become part of the story and it would go on and on and on. And now it's like something happens, it's dying down within the mind within 1 to 2 days. So there's like before, I would linger on stuff for far longer than necessary. I couldn't let go. So I'm much better at letting go. And I think that regarding emotional development has been really, really good.
And what does that look like for you now? Like as far as processing it, is it mostly just sitting with it in your body? Is it a cognitive thing?
Well, if I get distressed, I do a couple times. I did like 4 15-minute meditations in a row where I just was like just sitting in the body. I have a Saturday morning ritual where I take the dog to walk in nature. I took him out last night, 4-mile walk. And then I'm working with him on his obedience too. And then, but it's a ritual that I've started. And when I started this job, I do every Saturday. So I get out in nature, get in the trees, and just unwind. And then, but mostly I don't care. You know, I think that the one takeaway that when you had that interview with Barb Nagle, that really resonated with me was when she said, your next job is just your next job. It's no more than that. It's just your job. Don't give it. And I made some pretty, and when I took this gig too, I told them up front, I was burned out. I'm trying to get back to work, trying to make a little bit of money. I don't want any responsibility. I don't want to supervise people. I just want to do my thing and I want to go home. So I put some pretty good boundaries up when I initially started too. Thank you to this. Yeah, but I also kind of knew what I wanted too. I knew that the life that I left was no longer sustainable. And I had to acknowledge my weaknesses in people pleasing, poor boundaries and stuff like that. So now those things are much more defined. And I could leave at 5. I mean, I had a deadline the other day, so I ended up working late because I had to take a Friday off. But I'm much more self-aware. And where I think beforehand, I was just like, I'm just a fish in the ocean, just getting moved around by the waves and stuff like this. And I think now I have a lot more internal confidence that there are going to be setbacks, but I don't have to be pushed around by them. I don't have to get myself all dysregulated when things aren't going my way. Things are not going to go my way, but I can reel it back in much faster than I ever could before joining the community and meditation work and whatnot.
So I think that there's probably people listening right now that could potentially relate to your past job experience of being in a completely toxic work environment and being unable to walk away. And as you reflect upon that now, like, what was the glue? Like, what was, do you think that you were like in a state of functional freeze? Like, what was the underlying fear that was keeping you from breaking that tie?
Well, I think number one, I was addicted to the drama.
Mm-hmm.
And my ego wouldn't let me surrender. And I had power and I was learning something. But the one thing I didn't see is the possibility of something else.
Mm.
I think that when you're dealing with domestic violence or you're dealing with emotional violence, I think the one thing that, and I think this was kind of what happened with my father, that I ended up taking this job, is you have this repeating behavior of falling into these situations where these people have taken advantage of your emotional vulnerability and you don't have the self-worth, the self-compassion to change directions. And I think that whether it be a domestic situation or a hostile work environment, having your own self-worth to know that something has got to be better than this. And I think somebody had put it really well. In some ways, you get addicted to the golden handcuffs. You're making a decent amount of money, that's taking care of it. But then you get to a point where I'm like, in my external world was kind of changing too. My dad dying really changed the prism that way I was looking at, because with his death, I had dig into that. And then when I started digging into that, I'm like, I can't, these two truths cannot coexist any longer. This, the way that I feel about my job and dealing and having to go into my past to deal with all the stuff that was between my father and I, those things could not coexist together. One had to go. And I didn't even know that until 9 months after I left the job. It's like I was so stressed out from the job. But I think these both very difficult environments.
It's interesting you say there was the power there, and it was like there was the power there, but you were also being disempowered at the same time.
Yeah, very much. And I think by taking a sabbatical for so long was just this restoring process. I mean, I was on food stamps for a while. I was on Medicare for 6 months, and somehow it all worked out. And so there was some higher power that made the thing work. And I think that was like the surrendering was really restoring. Mm. Where I was like, this is awesome. I'm still alive. This is great. So yeah.
Couple more questions. The next one I wanted to ask you is, I was hoping that you could just share about how the relationship with your children has shifted or transformed as you've gone about your healing?
Well, I think number one is I was generous with them. You know, I'm financially, I was able to do some stuff for them, and I would go, you know, talk to them, and I had conversations. And sometimes these conversations are just very basic. And I was just having this, but I think one thing that was really, really beautiful is my middle guy went into the Air Force. He did that for 5 years. And then he decided after 5 years, he didn't want to do it anymore. He goes down to Houston, takes auto body school, gets out of that, works at an auto body shop for 3 months, decides this isn't what I want to do. And then the next thing he did is he leaves a relationship, leaves Houston and comes back this way, starts a new job, and he's traveling all around. And I think the one thing that I'm most encouraged by my kids, all of them, is that they have this ability to change. And the one thing that I was always afraid of was change. And when I talk about possibly going to the University of Colorado, is to embrace the change. It's like when Barb talks about that job is just a step along the way. It's not defines you. Whatever you do, every step you take is owning your thing. And my oldest, these partners that he have in this pizza business, they just bought a new shop, and they've got this entrepreneurial spirit. And I give my oldest son a tremendous amount of credit, and my ex-wife, because I was like, hey, you should go major in business. And they're like, sociology. And I think, truthfully, I think our family needed a sociologist. And not to say that he would come back and do anything, because now he's like this part business owner and stuff like that. But I think that to be true to yourself is really, really important. And my daughter, in much the same way, she went and she did a multitude of things. And now she's like a 911 operator. She drove an ambulance and she had all this stuff. And now she's doing that. And I think what they have done is taught me that change is good, that you embracing change is really, really necessary to live to give your life meaning and change is hard. I mean, and I think that was a big thing when I left my job, man. I didn't want to change it, but I knew it wasn't. It was all breaking down. And I think that by me changing, it helps my relationship with them, that we all change together. And there isn't this tension about making it about you and about making it about resistance. And you make the best. Isn't that what life's about, is trying to do the best you can and live the best life and not fight it? And yeah.
Mm. Well, they're lucky to have you as a dad. Okay. Last question is, what role has being a part of a community had in healing for you?
Man, I'll tell you what, there are seeds that just drop. And I'm like, when Nate dropped Complex Grief, and I was in that Complex Grief form, and I'm like, wow, this is, and there's like these things that along the journey that when people just put something on the chat, it's like, hey man, that I'm on that path right now. And our path is always changing because as humans, we're complex, man. So what we're dealing with 4 months ago, whether it be grief, is going to be a little bit different than what we're dealing with today. Today would be, how am I going to, I have to get my estate stuff put together for the tax man. I have to start looking into going into, when do I enroll in August for these classes? I've got some photography things that I'd like to do too. But to hear everybody's, just to see these, when Mitch puts down feral, I'm like, fuck yeah, I understand that. I understand that there's parts of me that are very feral. And what I have to do is look at that. It's like, what part of training this dog is changing me about what we were doing previously about training this dog wasn't working. So he's a little feral. I'm a little feral for resisting and keeping the status quo. So let's get some education about it. So I think that's really, really pivotal. This is like sometimes there's just these little seeds in the chats that just like, oh yeah, that's what I'm going for. And I think those seeds lead to something else. They lead to like a kind of self-discovery about, because I think that they lead to this form of emotional development that we can have, this emotional intelligence and this respect that we can have for ourselves that is really so important to adjust to this rapidly changing world, this super complex world. And if we can be at peace with ourselves, to whatever extent we can be at peace. I mean, because there's always going to be conflict around us, and even internally. And so I think that there's just, and I think that everybody that's in the pod is just going through different phases of their life. There's different cognitions and different realizations, and it's a journey. And I think that when you do this, it's just like, it's just giving you more tools and more awareness of the possibilities of what is available to it. And that, not to be fucking Pollyanna or anything like, but if there's stuff that you can do, like maybe I take another part-time job or whatever it may be. I know that when I first started here, I was like, oh, we're going to change the fucking world. But I think really what you got to do is you got to start with yourself. And if you can be your own, have your own self-belief and your own mastery of yourself, and you're going to have good days and bad days and stuff. But if those days shrink from years to months to weeks to maybe 24 hours to 12 hours or whatever it may be, then that's been, I think, really a gift through all of this. Is that stuff just gets, the troubles get smaller and smaller. They're just part of the journey.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing about the seeds is that it's a lot less threatening, and I think easier to take in or have a realization when you're hearing it through somebody else's experience, as opposed to if your therapist or somebody was trying to point something out to you. It's a lot more, I think it's just easier to take in and maybe accept, especially if you're hearing somebody else have the same struggle too.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think words are less intrusive. And I think your point about therapy is, so the immediacy is almost oppressive, because what they're sharing with you, and I think you need time to process it. And then when you're reading the chants, there's a certain amount of independence that you have that you can process it at your own pace, mm-hmm. in your own speed. And I think when we're in conversations with people, whether it be your boss or your significant other or whatever, receiving that kind of that input is sometimes very, very difficult.
Yeah, you get defensive.
Yeah. And I think that when you're maintaining your own space and stuff, it gives you time to like adjust. Mm-hmm. And so when people are putting words and like complex grief in a statement and sharing their experience, it gives you time, like you said, time to digest and time to see, oh yeah, there's a part of me. It's like that parts work. Mm-hmm. So much of these words are like parts. Feral is a part. Grief is a part. Anger is a part, sadness. There's all these parts of us that we're trying to put, we're a puzzle, and we're trying to, what is the puzzle of me that I'm trying to figure out? And I'm really grateful for being able to listen and to see people's words and experience. And I think that's what's really valuable about the community and stuff like that.
Well, thank you for not abandoning me, Scott. This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged.
BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist. Because we're all better with help. Visit betterhelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.